Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And James Krosvik.
Hey, James. You know, I don't remember if it was you or somebody else, but it was on Rob was doing his Q&A session last week, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago that I heard it. And there was a small phrase, and I would attribute it to you, and you don't have to admit it if it was yours or not, but there was a question around building reliability culture in an organization. So you got maintenance techs and maintenance managers and technicians and planners and schedulers. You got this whole crew that's allegedly working together to keep the plant running, right? And one phrase of that caught my attention was, it was something like that. It takes a lot of, you know, being there and a lot of donuts. And you don't have to admit it if it's yours or not, but I don't know if you recall that conversation. I didn't even know if you were there.
I'm not sure if which one that was, but it definitely wasn't me. But
oh, okay.
It makes perfect sense. Culture change is not something easy, but it's something we all need to do.
Yeah. And, you know, what we're talking about is that when you have a really poor reliability focused culture, or just a poor culture in general, it's a lot of CYA and just do the minimum and get out of there and dragging your feet and, you know, doing what you're told to, you know, and nothing more, ignoring issues that you walk by and say, yeah, we should fix that, but don't report it. That's, to me, is symptoms of a really poor culture in an organization. Would you, you know, what would you add to that list of poor culture?
You know, pencil whipping of PMs, another example.
Mm-hmm.
I often see the one you mentioned of seeing an issue but not reporting it, because then they're going to be the one who has to fix it.
Right.
I see that happen on a regular basis.
So they'll report the easy ones, not the hard ones that are going to take them all day to fix.
Yeah, or the ones they want to do and not the ones they don't want to do. Oh, so you'll see that.
Okay.
So you'll see a lot of stuff like that. Like I said, pencil whipping of PMs, or maybe they do the PMs based on the memory, but fill out the paperwork after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you may have missed things or forgot about things. Are you going to go back out and take the machine down again? Probably not. So those get checked off as complete. So you see a lot of stuff like that.
Okay. And I mean, that's kind of, those are all bits and pieces. And some organizations that have a reasonable program may have elements of that on occasion. And it's a sliding scale all the way up to a really good culture. And it's kind of the opposite of all that stuff, right? And apparently there's some donuts involved in there somewhere.
Well, maintenance, you can pretty much get maintenance guys to come to any meeting or listen to anything if you provide food.
That's true for engineers,
at least in my experience.
Yeah, it's true. I think that's a universal. What we would like is the good culture, where, you know, people take initiative, people recognize that this is for the good of the equipment or good of the plant, and it's a long-term view, that they take pride in their work. All of those kind of things are elements or symptoms of a good culture. But it's, as you mentioned, is that changing that, and I think also just maintaining it, is also hard to do.
Oh, it's not. Changing it is very, very difficult. Maintaining it, once we get it to where we want it, is a little bit easier, but it's still, we can't just set it and forget it, if you will. There is a lot of work that goes in from a planning perspective to make that change in the culture, to getting that change occurring. There, it's not an easy task. It, in my opinion, is why most maintenance initiatives fail, because we don't get the culture change we needed to make this successful.
Well, then what do you do? Let's say you have somewhere in the middle, you know, group that some people really take the initiative and do the right thing, even when nobody's looking and all those good things. And others are just pencil whipping it or just getting through the day or just doing the minimum. But let's say, I mean, you and your team come in and they say, all right, we're going to do the criticality analysis. We're going to lay all of this stuff out. We're going to, you know, and refurbish the planning and the senior management is on board, right? Yet how do you coach those senior folks and all the way through to What I struggle with, and it's, I think my style and your style and everybody else's style will be slightly different. So it's, how do you actually physically, what do you do to make it happen?
It's a lot of work. And you know what? I made the mistake of not putting in this work, in past lives, and stuff weren't as successful as it should have been, or didn't move at all. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's not that difficult. It just takes time, and it's new for us, especially as maintenance people, engineer people. You know, we think linear, logically, this happens, this happens, this happens. Whereas a lot of this change management and culture stuff isn't that easy. So what we typically have to do is you got to do a bunch of different things. You got to set the vision. Where is this going to go? You got to make sure everyone is aware of where we're going, how we're going to get there, that type of stuff. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Once we have that, then we got to figure out what's in it for them. Honestly, why am I going to change if there's no benefit to me?
Right.
Right. You can tell me that the company's become more profitable, but how does that benefit me? Does it make my job easier? Does it give me a bigger paycheck? So on and so forth. Right.
Right. Right.
I don't care if the shareholders make an extra 20% or whatever. How does this help me?
That's right. Yeah. What's in it for me? And that's the hard part. A lot of engineers go, well, this is just better. And that should be a good enough argument. I learned, like you, the hard way that's not sufficient. That's not enough.
No, we have to connect at that emotional level. What's driving the people that wants to make this change, right? So we got to identify what's in it for them. Mm-hmm. You know, we got to get ahead of the rumor mill. So if we don't communicate what we're doing, how we're doing it, all these different things, people are going to start to fill in other pieces on their own, and the rumor mill starts. So for us to be successful, we got to lay out that future vision, make sure everyone's aware of it. We got to give them that platform for change. Mm-hmm. Now, some instances, it could be that our plant runs so poorly that if we don't fix this, we're not going to have a plant in a year. That's enough motivation for most people to start looking at doing things differently.
Right.
But if we're running and we just want to get better, then how do we communicate that out to them? What are the benefits for them as well as the company? You know, we spend a lot of time on that. Mm-hmm. We also have to understand, how successful have we been with changes in the past? If we have a flavor of the month syndrome, it's going to be a lot harder to make that culture change. We got to do a lot more communication, a lot more change management activities to overcome that.
Yeah, and stay consistent.
Exactly.
Right? Because I had the folded arms and said, well, I'll just wait a month. You'll be back with some other programs. I don't know. I'm not going to invest in this one. And if we're back month after month after month with the same piece, and we show up every day, reinforcing what we're heading towards, that makes a huge difference. But I did work for one boss that was very impatient and was just had a penchant for reading business books. And, you know, it was like self-help books for a plant. And so one day we're rolling out quality circles, and the next day we're rolling out, you know, control charts. And then the next day we're rolling, it was whatever book he was reading, it would be that one would be the next one we'd do. And every couple of weeks, every month, it was easy. And our senior maintenance guy, he just crossed his arms. I'll just wait. It's going to go away.
Yep. And that's one of those things we have to be genuinely concerned about. The other thing we got to be concerned about from a change management perspective is what other changes are going on in the company. We have limited ability to change. Mm-hmm. So if we already have a lot of other changes going on and we try to do something else, that's going to have a direct impact on that. We got to work through all these different factors, and it usually requires a leadership team or steering team working together to come up with what the risks are. How are we going to communicate these out, or how are we going to mitigate some of these risks? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that I like doing is, because most of the time I'm dealing with maintenance people or engineers, is I'll use an FMEA format to do a risk assessment for the larger change that we're trying to implement.
Okay.
What's the potential failure modes, what's the risk priority number, all those great things. What are we going to do to overcome this? Mm-hmm, that's mm-hmm. going to help us shape our communication plan. It may help us identify other things we need to do. Like, do we slow this project down while this other one finishes up? Then we accelerate it. Well, it'll help us identify all these different things we need to do to help maintain and drive this cultural change forward. The other big thing I notice is that even if we get momentum and we start changing the culture, the moment there starts to see that culture change, I see a lot of senior leadership back off. They are no longer out on the plant floor asking questions about this stuff. Mm-hmm. And it kind of slides backwards. So we need to make sure that we continue that reinforcing of this is the right way of doing things for a long period of time.
Yeah.
So whether it's senior leadership, mid-level leadership out on the plant floor, whether it's reinforcing with KPIs or little celebrations with donuts and coffee, we got to continue to do these things until we get change embedded and it's the new way of doing business now.
And that's hard to gauge, isn't it? It's the senior folks they're looking at the next thing to do. They're you know, I often heard the phrase, well, I'm planning 3 years ahead or 5 years ahead, and I don't have time to do this one. I only have so many hours in the day. And says, well, all those hours you spent and all your team's resources been spent doing it really does need your 10 minutes to focus on this.
Yeah.
And that's a hard sell. And I've run into it a number of times. Oh, I got too many more important things to worry about. And says, well, this was the most important thing 6 months ago, and you're not talking about it now. So it's obviously not important anymore. And like,
but that's where a simple tool like a communication plan comes in. What's the message? Who's the audience? Who's delivering? Who's the sender?
Mm-hmm.
And what's the frequency this is going out? So I don't mean senior leadership has to be out on the plant floor every single day. But what have we identified through our communication planning that they need to deliver? How frequently is it? What are they delivering to who? Having that communication plan laid out identifies what we should be doing, how often we should be doing, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But it also allows us to gauge, based on other things we hear, how well that communication is going out, how effective it is. You know, for example, it might be that, you know, the senior leadership does a review or our thing over a town hall or a larger company meeting.
Right.
But we may want them, you know, once every couple of weeks to go out to the plant floor and just ask questions about it.
Right.
Right. It doesn't have to be large, massive undertakings. It can be short, targeted things.
Mm-hmm.
We just need to make sure we lay all that out in a good communication plan.
Yeah. Therein lies the rub a lot of times is that it was a phrase in one of those business books my old boss had. It was, you know, leading by wandering around, I think is what he phrased it. But it was basically, you can think through and put it in your communication plan. But when I go to an oil and gas facility, it doesn't seem to matter what we're doing. If we're in a conference room or out on the floor or in the lab or whatever, there's always a safety briefing, right? Here's where the exits are. Here's this what that alarm sounds like. This is that. And they do it pretty quickly, but it's always custom to the local setting. But it obviously started as somebody said, hey, we got to think this through and make it consistent. And it's if safety really is important, it's going to be the first thing we talk about. And I've run into that so many times where a senior folk says, oh, we're going to do this program, we're going to make this thing work, and we're going to drive for these improvements and looking for this, you know, get less scrap on the floor or more just-in-time processing as an operations type initiative. And there's a lot of maintenance activities that get shoved around or pushed around to make that work. And it's important. It's the top message right after the safety briefing for 3-4 months, and then it's forgotten. And that's but by just walking down the floor and saying, hey, how's that, you know, the technique you were talking about 6 weeks ago, is that still working or how's the thing going? Or, but I also found that walking down and asking a question, but then moving on before you hear the answer is more damaging than being there. The person's actually got to listen, because I think that gets to the culture, is that there's a back and forth. There's people engaged, and that's the culture we're looking for. If you go down and ask, you know, how's your day, that's not reinforcing the message.
Yeah, it's a major challenge. And you know, we got to reinforce that message. We got to provide that consistent message. And part of that is making sure that people can explain that message in different ways. So how an HR person might explain something is going to be different than how a maintenance manager explains something.
Mm-hmm.
But we need the message behind that to be consistent. Because if we don't, what happens?
Yeah, it just starts cracking and conflicting. And
exactly. What are they not telling us? What are they hiding from us? And the rumors start.
Man.
So it sounds simple. And I've made the mistake many times in the past of not thinking through who do I need to communicate what, building out that proper communication plan.
Mm-hmm.
And as a maintenance person, to me, that's not what we want to be doing, right? That's not technical. It's not fancy. It's not doing all the stuff we like doing, but it's one of those things that you got to do, and you don't have to be perfect at it. I can't remember the study, but I had a past podcast guest, Tara Holwagner, and she was talking about change management and these type of things. And something she said stuck with me. And this was, I think, one of the first few episodes I did. So it's been a couple of years now. But change management is one of those activities that we don't have to get perfect to get good results from.
Mm-hmm.
Every little bit of effort that we put in, we will see a huge return on that effort. So if we get 20% in, we're going to see a huge reduction in the resistance, the expedience in which we can implement these things will increase dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to get it perfect. You don't have to be a ProSci certified change management expert or anyone like that. But basic things like, what are the risks to the projects? What's the communication plan? Is there a vision of where this is going to go?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I like that. The concept is there is a return on investment for things like the communication plan. The part I want to reinforce, though, is that the communication plan isn't just what you broadcast or you send. It's how you listen. You know, we're going to roll out this big change, and three of the people are saying, well, wait a second, what's in this for me? And then what do you mean? And it says, well, you're asking me to add all this extra data or, learn all this new stuff. What am I have extra work to do. What am I not going to be doing? Or it's actually listening to their objections.
Yes. And right. Part of doing a good communication plan is doing that exact thing, but proactively.
Right.
Switching the role, and instead of being the person delivering these messages, what are the questions I'm going to get asked? I was involved with an organization going through a large change at one point,
mm-hmm.
and they had asked me to come in while they would communicate out these messages and ask them questions. Because what they wanted to do is start figuring out what are the most likely questions they could get asked so they could proactively figure out how to answer these things consistently amongst the entire team.
So wait a second. You're in there when you sat there, put on your maintenance tech hat, and then you were the maintenance manager hat, and then you were role-playing different questions back to these guys to get them ready for it? That's cool.
And you know what? It made a huge difference because there was a lot of things that they didn't think would be asked
mm-hmm.
or things that they thought they covered enough, but left a lot of ambiguity or questions.
Mm-hmm,
and what this forced them to do is revise their communication plan, revise their messaging.
Mm-hmm,
so that when they went out on the plant floor and started rolling this stuff out, they had answers to most of the common questions.
And so they weren't making it up, or they weren't deferring it, or they had an answer versus hand waving.
For most of them.
Yeah.
Now, what we also did as part of that communication plan is if we did not know the answer, you were to not make it up on the spot. Right. That was communicated to everyone. That mm-hmm. was, we will get back to you on that. That is a great question. You would take it to the team that was building that communication plan, and we would make sure that everyone had a consistent response again.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why is we have to avoid these potential risks and rumors. And if we don't do it to that level, it's going to make this change so much harder.
Mm-hmm.
But that role playing was a great way to identify where the gaps are. The other thing you need to consider is, I mentioned it briefly earlier, but who's the sender and receiver? There's been numerous studies on who's best sending the message.
Right.
Now, what we know is if it's a high level change, we're doing a large change, we're implementing a maintenance reliability program.
Right.
At a high level, we want to hear that from senior leadership. People on the floor, supervisors, they want to hear that from the senior leadership.
Right.
But what they want is they want the details of how it impacts them from their immediate supervisor.
Right.
So once again, we have similar messages, but different levels of detail coming from different people. So our plan has to account for that based on where those relationships are. What's the political and power dynamics, all those different things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's not something we can just throw together in 20 or 30 minutes, right? It's something we really got to put some effort behind. And if we don't, you're going to struggle.
Yeah. One thing I also learned, it's not always the senior leader or like the ops manager or even your first line supervisor. I think those are important messaging from different people at different levels of detail, right? And one's the vision, here's where we're going, and then the local impact, that makes sense. But I think there's also people within organizations that may not have a specific position within the chain of command, so to speak, right? The organization, but they're the person people look to say, is this make sense? Are we going to do this or not? And they're the ones that they may be the trusted advisor to everybody else, or they have an informal network that people trust them, and they'll follow them independent of where they sit in the hierarchy.
Yes.
Right. You got to find those people too. And get
absolutely.
Them on board.
Absolutely. I lost the term, but informal leader. That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those informal leaders. Absolutely. You got to find them. You got to get them on board. You got to make them some of those early adopters. So that way they're out promoting the same thing. Mm-hmm. Right. And sometimes you know who those are. Sometimes it takes a little work to get them on your team to help do some of these things. But once again, this is all prep work we need to be doing for that culture change. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Identify who those informal leaders are. Are they bought in or not? If they are, how do we get them involved early so they have ownership of this and they'll help drive it? If they're not bought in, why? Yeah. Let's figure out why so we can get them over to our side to help.
Yeah. Or change the plan or the strategy. It might be something subtle and it might be something that we just completely overlooked, and these people have the insight because of their network to say, all right, if you do that, it's going to really screw up this line over here, and we get, let's think this through a little better. And then that it, again, is that listening part. I found that the best way to roll out a change plan is to start asking, like, so how can we make this better? What's your idea? And then reinforce the ideas that are consistent with the overall structure that we're trying to roll out, right? And so the more you can make it their idea, over and over again, and it just happens to be consistent across the board, I think the more success you have. But the trouble is, I find, is that nearly everybody has a different set of what's in it for me kind of criteria, but you need to understand it.
Exactly. So what we do in some of these communication plans, and especially on that WIFM piece, right? I'm mm-hmm. thinking of the ADKAR model right now.
Right.
Awareness, desire, knowledge, ability, reinforcement, specifically mm-hmm. on the D, the desire piece. Mm-hmm. In order to create that desire, we're going to have the benefits for the company at a whole level because everybody wants to know that, but it's not going to drive them internally to make these changes. So then we'll identify what are the benefits for the maintenance tech? What are the benefits for the planner, for the supervisor, and lay those out. So as these questions come up, and as we communicate to these different groups, here are the benefits for those people. Mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. at the same time, what are the risks for each group? Because planners are a great example. And a lot of organizations, we call them maintenance planners, but they're not really maintenance planning. They're doing a bunch of other stuff.
Right.
So what's the benefits to them? They're actually going to do their maintenance planning work. They're going to be proactive and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm, now, what are some of the risks? Some of them like doing the stuff that they're doing now, which isn't exactly planning. So are they going to survive that role change?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Now
that's a real good, that's a good motivator for resistance to change as well. If my job gets changed so much that either I don't like it or it's not necessary anymore, then what am I going to do?
And that's why if we identify the risk for each one of these roles as well, now we can get talking points. Okay. We understand that this is the third time your job description is going to change in the last 3 years. Here's what it's going to, here's why it's going here mm-hmm, and explain. Mm-hmm. And if we have that information, it's a much more easy conversation than, well, it's going to change and I don't know why.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, I was just thinking back to the informal leaders is maybe a good technique is to figure out what kind of donuts they like and bring those, make sure they're on. It goes back to that WIFM thing in a more serious vein is you got to make sure that all these elements are in place, and it's a massive puzzle. And the ADKAR model is that reinforcement, and I think is what we talked about early on, is that reinforcement is as critical as everything else, all the training, all the coordination, all of the messaging, all of the resources being allocated to it and so on. If it's not reinforced, if you're not listening to where the issues are, where the objections are, what are the problems, or what are the niggly little things, if it's just this change is great except for this part right here that's an irritant. And if you don't ferret those out and reinforce, I call it reinforcement, but it's actually adjusting and honing and smoothing the process out so that it works. And if you're not listening, right at the start, but also not listening as it's being implemented and all the nuances surface, you got to deal with those on an ongoing regular basis. And I think the only way to do that is be there and listen.
Yeah. And that's one of the most important parts of that communication plan. Not only are we just sending out all these messages, we need that feedback loop. Mm-hmm. What's being received, what's being communicated back, what questions are being asked, mm-hmm. so we can refine that and make sure that we're answering the questions, improving the effectiveness of our communication. Because I get it, emails are efficient. They're easy to send out to hundreds or thousands of people, but are they that effective for communication, especially in a large change?
Yeah. Not.
Probably not.
Probably not. So you can make it out of a nice newsletter, you know, but it's still not.
Exactly. So, you know, we have to make sure that we're checking the effectiveness of this communication through that feedback loop. We got to listen to what's being said. What are the rumors we're hearing? What are the questions we're getting? Mm-hmm, and revise mm-hmm. this over time. It sounds silly, but the vast majority, in my opinion, and that's all it is an opinion. A lot of the change management stuff comes down to communication.
Yep.
Now, there are a lot of dynamics behind it. There's political dynamics, power dynamics. There's all these other things going on behind the scenes. Part of that we can overcome with communication. Part of it we overcome with other tools. But the vast majority, we just need to communicate well and identify what those risks are, what those benefits are, and get that communicated out.
Yep, definitely. This is obviously a huge topic, and I know we've talked about this in a couple different ways over time, and I'm sure it's one, James, that we're going to come back to over and over again. You know, and as we're recording this, a lot of us are around the world are in the COVID-19 lockdown, and there's been a lot of changes forced on us, and some facilities are deemed critical and are back up and running or never stopped or running overtime or major changes to layouts and so on. And there's, we can learn a lot from how this messaging is working, how the communication is working, how we're working with our teams to achieve these remarkable changes that are occurring. As we come back to opening up plants again and rolling out new equipment and so on, there's, again, all of this is a change, and there's going to be new rules in place, as many of us are calling it the new normal, I suppose. But it's a lot of change, and it's not the time to roll out a major new program change as you're dealing with all the other ones. But if you're listening to this and you got questions and, you know, what's some details of this or what works and doesn't work or any of those kind of things, head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And we'd love to hear how it's going for you and what kind of things you'd like us to talk about as going forward. And you can find James at Eruditio. I think you're actually at home, but I think you are not in airplanes as much as you used to be. So that's probably a good thing.
No, I've had a little reprieve from airports and airplanes at the moment.
Yeah.
Good for my you. Kids actually know what I look like. They remember who I am right now. So that's good.
That's good. And, but it's, both James and I enjoy getting questions, and helping you out on the spot. It don't feel like you're imposing on us, because we turn that around into a blog post or a podcast episode or whatever. So it's, we can help other people. And you probably, as you're listening to this and you hear us asking for these questions each time, is keep in mind that, you know, if you've got a question, I'm quite sure a good part of our audience has a similar one and or hadn't thought of that and are happy that somebody brought it up. So be that person. We'd love to hear from you. So with that, James, I think we'll wrap this one up.
All right. Thanks, Fred.
Cheers, James.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.